Just before the theme music comes in today, I want to send out some thanks for listening. We reached over 200 downloads in our first 20 days and have listeners in over 20 countries. But that is just a start. Be sure to tell your friends about the show and remind them to subscribe like you did so they never miss an episode. Also, a quick update on our sponsor race, Ultraman Canada, which I co-race direct with Brad Sawa. We have opened applications right up to 2023, and due to pent-up frustration with COVID cancellations around the world, applications have been coming in quickly. Unlike other races, UMC does not have official entry windows for applications. We don't even have an application fee. Go to officialultramancanada.com for registration information and follow us on Facebook for up-to-date information on the 2021 race and the 2022-2023 registrations. Now let's start the show.
You're listening to 515, the Ultraman podcast, the show that invites you into the lives of people who make up the Ultra family. Here's your host for these conversations, co-race director of Ultraman Canada, Larry Ryan.
Thanks, MJ. In today's episode, I speak to Juan Craveri of Argentina, who gives a number of great racing tips. Steve King Stories highlights a Brazilian legend. And in the Ultraman Canada Racer Preview, I speak with the serial entrepreneur, Eiko Hibino. My guest today has completed 13 Ultraman distance races, 61 iron distance races, 4 135-mile ultramarathons, and is a 2x Epic 5 finisher. With a resume like that, I can only be speaking to one athlete in the world. Joining us from his home in Buenos Aires, Argentina, Juan Craveri. Hello, Juan.
Hello, Ray. How are you? It's been a long time, huh?
It has. It's nice to have you here on the podcast. Thank you for bringing me or giving me that time.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So I mentioned all of these races that you've done, and you've also done 22 marathons. What allows you to continue to race, race after race after race? How come you just haven't gotten bored of this activity?
Okay. No, I think it's a matter of balance. Okay. I have a big family, a lot of work. So it's a kind of balancing that stress life. So I can go really fast on my work, family, a lot of work, a lot of time spending my mind on that things. So I need the races or perhaps training to deal with that. Okay. So for me, totally, it's 100% a matter of balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously with as many races as you're doing and the distances that you're doing, the balance comes from working really hard and spending that time with the family. So you're not just doing a little bit of time with the family and a little bit of time with work and a lot of racing. There is that balance in between to keep it nice and even.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the day has only 24 hours. I need a 30-hour day at least. But that's all that we have. We have to manage that.
Yeah. And how often do you take family members with you on a trip to do one of your races?
Well, it depends on their schedule, okay? In our country, South America, our school year goes from March to December. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to find a spot, perhaps during the winter holidays, which are in July, or perhaps during the summer, okay? From December to February, okay? So it depends on the races. It was impossible for me to take them to, for example, Ultraman Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Because it's at the end of November, they are doing the final exams, so it's difficult. On the other side, when I went to Ironman Hawaii in October, it was 1 month previous to that, so they escaped from school for 1 week or 10 days, and we managed to do that. Okay. During July or during January, but during January, there are not many races.
Yeah, it's winter for a majority of the of the world at that point. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Of all of those races that you've done so far, is there one that you could pick that means the most to you? Like maybe not necessarily for the result that you had, but just for the experience that you had at the race. Is there one that stands out for you?
Yeah, I think by far it's Epic 5. I did it twice, but the first time I did it, it was 2011. It was a mind-blowing experience. As you know, it's five Ironmans. Five consecutive days in five different islands. Mm-hmm. So sleep deprivation is the key issue. The last 2 days, you sleep 2 hours, 3 hours. I'm not very good on the bike. So as you know, this kind of sport, you need to be good on the bike. Right. If you're slow, it takes a long time to finish. So that's my case. So besides the long distances, sleeping, it's the real issue. So you feel like a zombie. For the last 2 days, but it's mind-blowing, totally mind-blowing. It's amazing how far you can push your body and your mind. I remember the second time I did it, it was 2017, I think. Remember the fifth Ironman was in the Big Island. I remember going on the bike, falling asleep on the bike. That day I had only 1 hour of sleep, coming from 2, 3, or 4 hours the previous days. So yeah. It was really, really dangerous. Yeah. As soon as I realized I was falling asleep on the bike, the first time that happened to me, I put myself on the side, awake, and I waited for my crew, because it was really, really, really dangerous. I was feeling that I was crossing to the opposite side of the road. Really, really dangerous. So it's dangerous on the side, but interesting on other sides. You know? It's right. Pushing it's pushing your mind and body to the extreme.
Yeah, and you're going to be doing something that's going to push your body past everything you've already done to this point as well, because I saw on your Facebook that you signed up to do Uberman. Can you tell us a little bit about what are the components and distances and areas of the race that you'll be doing with Uberman?
Yeah, well, talking about mind-blowing distances, in this case, it's you have to cross or swimming from Santa Catalina Island to LA. It's around 34K. It's, I think it's 22 miles. Then
there's a lot of ship traffic in that one. There's a lot of ship traffic in that area, is there not?
Yeah, you must have a small ship going with you and two kayakers. But it starts around 11 p.m., so the traffic will be at the very lowest.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Then we have to take the bike, 400 miles, which is 600-something K, from L.A. to Badwater, the lowest point in the U.S., in the continental U.S., and then doing, which is Badwater, from Badwater to Mount Whitney, from the lowest point of the U.S. to the highest point. So it's 135 miles, which is 217K. So we'll see. We'll see. It's my main concern now is the swim. I never done such distance. My longest swim was 10, 11K for the Ultraman. We'll see. We have plenty of time. Also, we must wait to see what happens with the pandemic. If we will be allowed to travel. We'll see. It's in October, so it's plenty of time. We have plenty of time. And if it is not this year, I'll do it next. Right. So I'm not stressed about this.
Yeah. And of course, you've done Badwater twice already. So you know that part of the course.
Exactly. I've been there four times.
Oh, you've been there four times?
Yeah, I did two times, one with a different course. If you remember, there was an issue several years ago.
Yeah.
There was a new deputy or I don't know what, a new political guy that wanted to make the first lines of the papers. And they challenged this race. So they did an alternative course. So I did that. Then I did the regular one, the usual one. I went there for a third time, but I had a plantar fasciitis, which appeared 1 month before the race. So I went there anyway. When I was 90K from the finish line, I was done. So I had to DNF. And then I did it a fourth time, but as a crew member, a crew for a friend. So I knew the course, fortunately.
Okay. Yeah. And what do you think the difference was for you doing it as a crew member versus as an athlete? Did you share in a different way with that experience?
No, it wasn't the first time for me crewing. I had crew before for Ultraman, so mm-hmm. I like it. I think it's a way of giving back. Because as athletes, we always depend on, we must have the crew. We cannot finish events without the crew. We are a team. So that's why I always try to finish the race, crossing the finish line with my crew. Because it's a way of expressing thanks or to say we are a team. Yes, because I'm going to receive the medal, but we all did it. So I love and I like to be on the other side, to feel what the crew feels. Perhaps sometimes it's boring. Sometimes they have to deal with the not good humor of the athletes. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the great things about the Ultra family is the circle does go around. Everybody's exactly. giving to the other person. Yeah,
exactly.
And that's how you
it's
and
part
I
of met. Johanna. It's Johanna, part of Johanna.
Yes. Yeah. And that's how you and I met, because in 2011, Lucy and I crewed for you at the Ultraman Canada. You still, to this day, are probably the easiest athlete that I've ever crewed for at Ultraman. Everything was just like,
I've been told that.
Yeah, whatever. It's always whatever. So, yeah, I appreciate that in you.
I think that's the attitude for a long distance.
Yeah.
You have a lot of stress going that distance. So if you add a bad attitude, you can't do it.
Right.
So I think that's, let it go. Let it flow. Let it flow and you will finish.
Yeah. So with your Uberman then, do you have a crew picked out for that? Do you have some go-to people that you're hoping to count on to show up and help you out with that one?
Not yet. Not yet. No, I have decided to do this race perhaps 2 or 3 weeks ago, so I didn't have enough time to think about this. And as I said before, it will depend on the COVID and if we can travel, so if I can take people from my country, or if I will need people from the States to make my crew.
Yeah, right. So anybody out there who's listening that wants to help Juan, send him a message.
Yeah, please.
Okay. With a race like that, how long are you expecting to be on the course, like total time? And would you be taking time to sleep so that you're not crashing your bike?
I remember once, as I'm not good on the bike, once I tried to do Furnace Creek 508. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was with a guy, he had experience doing the race. And he told me that it will be good to sleep only 20 minutes from time to time. That's good for the brain, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But my idea and how I know my body is to sleep from time to time 4 hours. For example, doing 300K, take a nap of 4 hours, then resume and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, I followed his advice, so I didn't finish. So for Overmar, that's my idea.
Right.
Once I finish the swim, perhaps take a nap, 2 or 3 hours to recover, then start the bike and fraction the bike. Okay, it's 600K, or perhaps do 200K, take a 3-4 hour nap, not only for me, but also for the crew, then resume and again, okay? Fortunately, it's not a matter of, you have a time limit. You can take as long as you want.
Right.
But that's my idea. I recover really fast when I sleep. So it's really important for me. Okay. So that's the main idea. Of course, I will make some adjustment as soon as I go closer to the race.
Okay.
But that's the main idea. That's the main idea.
Yeah. And I know that like people listen to this podcast, they're focused on doing Ultraman probably, or they're Ironman people. And one of the first questions we always get when people are signing up to do Ultraman is, how do I plan my nutrition? Because they're used to doing Ironman where they can, you know, have a few gels and water and Gatorade or whatever and get through the day. And they don't know the difference of how to go for a 3-day event and get their nutrition. So on an event like this, what's your nutrition plan going to look like?
I don't know if I am the best example talking about nutrition. I remember during Epic 5, once I sent my crew to McDonald's and they brought me tons of calories. So for some people, that might be the worst thing to do. But when you are burning calories, as we do during these events, anything might help. So we have to eat what we... So it's really, really personal. I think that every athlete has different needs and they must talk with a nutrition specialist and make a plan. Of course, it's not only with gels. For example, for me, during an Ultraman, it's gels, it's Ensure, which is that shake, turkey sandwich. That's my main menu for the race, okay? And from time to time, we can add a cheeseburger, or that's good for the mind also. So, but I insist, it's really, really, really personal. You must go and visit the nutrition specialist, and he or she will help you with the plan, with your needs, special needs. We are all different.
Right, yeah.
As we do with our training plan, it's not my training plan. It's not exactly the same as for you. So the same we need for nutrition. It's a personalized plan.
But yeah, it's good advice. Good advice. Yeah. And I think probably the other thing is to try and train on your nutrition plan.
Of course. Nothing new during race day. Of course, no. You have to try your nutrition during training to make your body adjust and adapt to that nutrition. Of course, that's by far, yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. So this sounds like a pretty crazy event that you're going to be doing. I'm sure most people listening will think that this is insane kind of distance, and there's always something else that's more insane and a greater distance. Are there any other races that you have on your radar, on your bucket list of things to do that you want to complete before your athletic days are over?
Yeah. There's a friend of mine, Giorgio Alessi, from Italy. He did, which is from arc to arc. It's from the Marble Arch in London. You have to run from that Marble Arch to Dover. Then wait for the tides, and when the tides are good, you swim from Dover to Calais. And then from Calais, you get your bike and go from Calais to Paris, and you finish at the Arc of Triomphe.
Triumph. Yeah.
So that's it. Looks funny, at least, or different.
Yeah. And that's just like a personal journey. It's not like done as an event or.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. But you need to get the authorizations. You need to get the... It's not easy. It's not that I want to do it next weekend and I go and that's done. No, you have to ask for permissions and first for the crossing. Swimming the channel is not an easy task. You must be on the middle of the channel, going good, and out of nowhere, the tides change.
Right.
And you are swimming on a treadmill, so you have to finish and you are done. So it's not an easy one.
Yeah. What's you were talking earlier about your balance with your family and your job. Mm-hmm. What is the things that you do outside of triathlon training in order to help maintain that balance? What do you have for hobbies? What do you have for activities that you do?
Besides family, work, and training.
Yeah. Is there anything else that fits in your life other than those three things?
Yeah. It's not enough time, but I like to read. I unfortunately, I don't have enough time to read as I would like to have. So I have changed to Audible. Audible is nice. So while training, you can put your AirPods and read some fantastic books. And mostly that, reading and spending time with the family. But it's difficult when you, as I said before, you only have 24 hours. So besides sleeping 6, 7, sometimes if you're lucky, 8 hours, then training, commuting, working, it's not easy to have plenty of time. So mostly during holidays, I have enough time to read as long as I want, to have 3, 4, 5 books, and make a balance of what I didn't read during the year.
Is there something that you're reading now that you think is interesting that you might want to share?
No, I have finished. I'm reading.
In air quotes, yes.
From Thoughts of Marcus Aurelius, the Roman Emperor. So it's interesting to have that vision. So many years ago, it's really interesting.
So you don't just delve into books about the sport. You're using that go outside of the sport.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Excellent. If I could just get one more tip out of you, because you're probably the most experienced person we've had on the podcast at this point. And I know people want tips. They want ideas of what they can do to train. So if there was one thing that helped you out, whether you learned it from a coach or learned it on your own or learned it by doing something wrong at a race, what would you say is the one thing that could change a person's ability to finish an Ultraman as they are training?
We always find ourselves at the lowest point, and we are more closer to quit than to go on. And what we have to be, we have to be patient. Wait, and remember the movie Gladiator, when the movie starts, they said, hold. That's what we have to do. Hold. And time will go over and you will find that you are on the deepest point of yourself. You want to quit, you want to go home. And if you wait, if you hold, you will realize that slowly but slowly you will start going up, and then you will finish. It's a matter of patience, but always your body and your mind tries you to quit, to go to the car or get the chair or whatever, because it's easier. So it's your mind. Remember, this is sport, as we said, is 90% mental and the other 10% is in your head. Okay, so it's we are supposed to be trained for these races. So the other is 100% mental. So that's my best advice, or what I have learned in my race is this. You have to hold, of course, if you have a wound, or it's better to wait and not to make things worse. But it's just a thing of being tired, both mentally or physically. It's keep hold and keep going.
Right.
You will bounce and you will finish your race.
Excellent. That's excellent advice. I really like that.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you dropping in on Zoom and giving us this time to hear some of your stories. And hopefully people out there have now picked up a few more tips as well. And we'll be following you on Uberman, whether it's this year or next year. We'll be watching that. And I would love to have you back after the race in order to hear how that all unfolded for you.
Okay. If I'm alive, yes. Not in a black bag.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Now, here's another Steve King
story. Amazingly, over the years, we've seen two athletes that have won the World Ultraman title on 6 different occasions. So I'm going to introduce you first to the gentleman who did that. He had been here just before getting his first win in 2003, but he came back and won the event again in 2005, 2008, 2009, 2011, and his final win was in 2012 at the age of 47. In 2007, he was actually in second position to the great Swede, Jonas Colting. And in 2010, he was fourth place behind the Australian Mike LaRue, Jonas Colting, and the US's Slater Fletcher. But some interesting things had happened as well, because when you look at the battles he used to have with the great Miro Krigar of Slovenia, you may have heard Jane Barkos in her talk on this podcast talk about the Brazilian who often ran with Miro. And the two of them would run together, usually to even beyond the 40-mile point, and take off at such an amazing pace. One time they were inside 39 minutes for the first 10K. It was just amazing to watch. But in 2012, he bested Miro, and that was the year that Amber Montfort was in third place, the woman who owns the record for the course on Hawaii. And in 2013, Miro, who was in his 50s then, won the event overall, beating out Alex. And third place was Hilary Biscay of the US. And don't forget, we've had three women, therefore, who have been third overall at the World Ultraman Championships. I mentioned Amber Montfort, Hilary Biscay, but the earliest winner in 83 and again in 85 was Ardis Beaux. Now, it also, when you look at 2011, when this man had a victory, he bested the Canadian Michael Coughlin and Miro Krigar. And as I mentioned, Miro came back and took that victory in 2012. And in 2015, Mike Coughlin actually ended up winning the world title. But in 2010, what was interesting was the fact that Kevin Kutjahr of Australia, who lives in Penticton, won the world title in 1995. But in 2010, he won Ultraman Canada ahead of Mike LaRue, who went on to win the world title that year. And Mike Coughlin was third that year and went to the Big Island and won the race in 2015. Now, you may notice the shirt I'm wearing here. One of the things about this gentleman is every year he would bring over shirts for a lot of members of the organizing committee. And I was always very proud to be a recipient of one of these. And we're very proud of this gentleman, because one of the other things he did over the years was get involved in the sport in terms of helping organize. And he's one of the organizers for the UB515, an Ultraman distance race in his home country of Brazil. And the man I'm referring to, of course, Alexander Ribeiro.
Thanks, Steve. We have another athlete turned 515 race director coming up in the next episode. Be sure to tune in and listen to my conversation with Van Sanchez of Mexico. And speaking of the World Championships, the invitations and welcome packages are being sent out in the next few days. Watch your inbox if you've applied. A few spots are also held for the Ultraman Canada finishers in July. So if you are one of our UMC racers this year, you could be attending the World Championship in November. And stay tuned after the Ultraman Canada athlete profile for a crew story from UMC alum and Hawaii finisher Will Rogers. And now, my conversation with Eiko Hibino, who hopes to finish Canada this July and apply for one of those coveted spots in Hawaii in November. Today's Ultraman Canada athlete preview is with a woman who loves to travel and race. She has participated in ultramarathons in New Zealand, Vietnam, and Japan. She's a finisher at the 515 race in Israel, and she shares time living between Dubai and Tokyo, where I've caught up with her today. Welcome to the podcast, Eiko Hibino.
Thank you. It's really good to see you, Rory. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. It's great to have you here. You're our second Japanese athlete to be on the podcast.
Yes. I already saw the Makoto's.
Yeah, that one has been a hit. People have enjoyed listening to Mikado and his answers.
Yeah, he's a really lovely person.
Yeah. Do you know him personally?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, we usually swim together on every Monday. Yeah, he's a pretty good swimmer.
And do you keep up with him in the pool then, or?
Yeah.
Will you two be racing at Ultraman Canada as you do the swim? Will you be near one another?
Hope so. Because he's much faster than I.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, before we get into your athletic career, you have a pretty interesting background outside of your ultra racing. You've also done another kind of racing, which is drift car racing.
Yes. I'm a plastic surgeon, and when I was a medical student, I have been doing a drifting racing.
And how does one get started in that? How did you get involved in that?
Actually, my father was working for one of the best Japanese company. Maybe you know Toyota.
Yeah.
He's a director of the Toyota, and when I was young, when I was a child, he always took me to the circuit to see the Formula One races. So from my childhood, I really like driving cars. Seeing the car racing, and when I entered the university, he bought me one car, and then I found it's really fun. So I wanted to do something with my car, and I decided to do drifting.
Nice. So now, did you do that on a track, or are you doing this like illegally out in the roads, like we see in the movies, or what are you doing?
To be honest, yeah, I sometimes deserve it. It's already 15 years ago.
Yeah, long time ago. Yeah,
long time ago. I was young.
Yeah. And so when you're doing that, I'm assuming there's a great adrenaline rush involved in doing that kind of racing and things like that. Have you ever been scared of your own performance of holding the car or anything like that?
Yeah, of course. I crashed a lot.
A lot? Okay.
A lot. But I've never broke my body. Never.
Well, that's a good thing. Yeah.
It's really lucky.
Yeah. So tell me about these crashes then. Like, was there anything like really terrible or?
Do you know, have you ever seen drifting?
Yes. Well, I've seen it in the movies and like a documentary on TV or something.
Ah, okay, I see. So when I was doing the drifting,
mm-hmm.
How can you say English? Like, I was doing
the drift, the actual drift part, the sliding.
There was a wall, and I straight to the wall and crashed.
Oh yeah. So would that be like side onto the wall then as you're drifting into it? Or did you like lose control and go head on into a wall?
I lose control totally. And speed was like 100K.
Oh, yeah. And so you said you've crashed multiple times. Does that mean that you rebuilt your car each time or you just get a new car?
Rebuild. Yeah, because I was just a student. I don't have enough money. So I usually rebuild my car by myself.
Oh, you're also a mechanic.
Yeah, and not a professional, but that's because I don't have enough money, so I have to do it by myself.
Oh.
So I learn by myself, and I try to build, sometimes ask my friend, my professional friend.
Yeah.
And I always rebuild again. I don't know how many times I did it, but I think more than 10 times.
And what color was your car? Was it all tricked out with lights and all that stuff, or was it inconspicuous and just a regular looking car?
Oh, it'd be better to show the picture then.
Sure.
Here.
Oh yeah. So that's nice. like a metallic purple.
Yes. And actually, I colored it by myself as well.
You did the paint job.
Yeah. I don't have money at the time.
Wow, you just did everything. That's amazing.
No, I just want to try.
Yeah.
I must say fast, and if I cannot, maybe I would ask someone.
And are there a lot of women involved in drift racing?
Not really. When I did it, maybe less than 10 people, I think.
Mm.
And I'm an only student.
You were the only student. Everybody else had a little bit of money in the bank and was able to afford to do it as a hobby.
After 1 year of racing, I got some sponsors to help my career.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
And I have been drifting for six years before going to internship.
Yeah.
As a medical doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's move on to that part then. Let's find out about your occupation. You list your occupation as a plastic surgeon.
Yes.
But I'm a little bit skeptical of how much you work, because after following your Facebook, it seems like you're always on the road. You're always doing a race somewhere in the world. So are you still a practicing plastic surgeon?
No, I already retired.
Okay. So,
after finishing an internship as a medical doctor, I already started my business as an owner of cosmetic surgery clinics.
Okay.
And when I moved to Dubai, I started another business. I started selling cars because I really had a good connection of racing teams. So I started trading cars from Europe to Dubai and Japan.
Sorry, did you say you're importing cars?
Yeah, import and export.
Yeah, okay.
Between Europe, Dubai, and Japan, sometimes China.
Okay, so this was kind of a little entrepreneurial side hustle that you set up to...
Yeah, right, like that.
Yeah.
And also, I started another business as a supplement.
Right.
I'm still selling a collagen, a placenta, like a beauty serums.
Beauty serum? Is that?
Beauty serums for cosmetics.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And it works very well. So at this moment, I don't need to work so hard.
So you've had a number of jobs already.
Yeah, yes. And I have my staffs. So now I can focus, and I really want to focus on my sports now.
Yeah. Well, that's nice that you have that comfort to be able to do that.
Yes, I'm really happy to do so.
And do you have multiple plastic surgery clinics that you own now?
Yeah.
And where are they?
In Nagoya. Have you ever...
Nagoya? Yeah.
Nagoya? Have you ever been to Japan?
I have not been to Japan, no. I was thinking about coming last year to go to the Olympics. I went to the Olympics in 2016, and I was thinking about coming again. And then it overlapped too close with our Ultraman race, so I wasn't going to be able to do it. And then, of course, COVID. So, yeah, everything goes out the window.
Yeah, I have my clinics in Nagoya, which is located in the middle part of Japan. It takes 2 hours from Tokyo.
2 hours by train?
By train, yeah. Express. Yeah.
And you also spend some of your time living in Dubai.
Yeah.
Or is that your permanent residence now? Or how do you split your time between Dubai and Tokyo?
I usually stay in Dubai in the winter. Because in summertime, Dubai is too hot. It was like 50 degrees. I don't want to stay there in summer. So summertime, right. I prefer to stay in Europe or Japan. In Dubai, it's perfect.
Now, when you're in Dubai, like you were saying, it can be very hot in the summer and you're not going to go there. But is there a place to work on your cycle training while you're in Dubai? It seems like it's very flat. Is there mountains or hills nearby that you can get to?
We don't have mountains in Dubai, but there's a good mountains in the Ras Al Khaimah. It's another region, another part of UAE.
Okay, yeah.
And it takes 2 hours from Dubai.
Okay, so you have to drive for a little bit to get to a good cycle training area.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But we also have a good cycle track in Dubai, a lot.
On the track?
On the track, but 80 kilometers or something.
Oh, okay. That's good.
It's pretty good.
And when you're in Dubai, what are you doing at that point? Are you running your export or import business still at that point, or are you just hanging out?
Just trading. Everywhere.
Okay, well, let's try and piece together these different phases then. You were training to be a medical doctor, you're drift racing, and when you leave the drift racing, you find your way to triathlon. Where's the piece in between? How do you find your way to triathlon out of drift racing?
I stopped the drift racing because I was getting busy because of internship as a medical doctor. So after finishing our internship, actually I wanted to get back to the drift racing. But when I finished that, I just noticed motorsports is more like a money game.
Yeah.
Even we are talented, if we don't have enough sponsors, we cannot win because another rich racers or racers with good sponsors can get the expensive engines.
They get the best cars, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So I thought it's not pure.
Right.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. It's not the best driver winning, it's the best car winning.
Yeah, that's right. So for me, it's no more challenge. So I want to do something new to try myself. And that's why I started sports.
Right.
Yeah, even if I get expensive bikes, it's all about my efforts and my heart, my training.
Mm-hmm. It's still you that's running the bike.
Yeah.
Let's do our transition and get over to your athletic side then, since you kind of brought that up now that we're talking a little bit more about your transition into athletics. If you've listened to the podcast with Mikado, you know that I do a thing called 2 minutes in transition, where I'm going to give you like just some rapid fire questions and you just give me some quick snappy answers. You don't need to go into detail on these ones. And then on the other side of that, we'll get into your athletics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
How many bikes do you own?
3.
Do you have a favorite?
No.
No. Okay. Some people have a favorite. you're a big traveler. So what is one place that you have not visited yet that you still want to travel to?
Scotora Island.
Where's that?
Yemen.
Yemen?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And what is your go-to meal or treat after you finish a race?
Ice cream.
In any particular flavor?
Chocolate,
okay. And I know that you've said that you also like to cook. So what do you cook when you want to impress someone? What's your meal to impress?
Oh, it's difficult. Maybe spare ribs.
Spare ribs?
Yes. I'm getting hungry now. It's lunchtime here.
Yeah. Okay. Who is your favorite athlete?
Kylian Jornet.
Again, what is it with you Japanese people? Oh, you got the book. Okay, well, that was my next question, is what's the last book you read?
It's wrong.
Finding Ultra, yeah, nice. All right, last question, a little bit strange, but you're an ultra marathoner. Have you ever posted a photo of your feet on Facebook after a race?
Yes.
Yes, okay. More than once?
More than 10 times.
You've done a number of ultra marathons.
Yes.
I saw on your resume that you had Tarawera Ultra Marathon in New Zealand Vietnam Mountain Marathon, Yakushima Ultra, Kyoto Grand Traverse, Izu Trail Journey. Which of these, I mean, they all sound like some beautiful places and challenging races, I'm sure. Which of these would you recommend for other people to try, either for the course or just for the destination itself? Which ones did you really enjoy going to?
Vietnam? Vietnam, 100%.
Tell me more about the Vietnam race, and what was that one like, and why is that the quickest one to come to your head?
I found the race for my friend, and it's pretty far from the airport. From Japan to Vietnam, it took only 5 hours. But after arriving airport, I had to ride a bus more than 6 hours to reach the race venue.
Wow. Okay.
But even though, I can say it's worth visiting. The area is called Sapa.
Okay.
It's close to the China.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some minority ethics, minority people there,
mm-hmm.
and very small village. And the view was so beautiful. And food was great, and people are so nice. And this is very tough.
Yeah. So tell me about the race. What kind of elevations were you climbing through the mountains and stuff?
Yeah, I joined the 42K. But elevation gain was, I think, 4,000 meters.
Oh. Yeah.
So it means there's also a downhill. Mm-hmm. So approximately 20K with 4,000 elevation gain. It's pretty much.
And you were saying that some of the views were nice. Is a lot of the course with view, or are you in trees for a lot of it? Like, how's the course run?
70% of the course, we have views from the mountain. It was so beautiful, even it was heavy rain.
Oh, like a tropical rain?
Not tropical rain, consistently raining all day. Even though it was very beautiful. And my ex-boyfriend joined the same race last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was completely sunny day. And he sent me some pictures, and it was so beautiful. I really wish to get back there.
Yeah. So you think that's a race you'll do again to try and see it in its real beauty?
Yeah, I did only 42K, but next time I want to try 100 miles. And 100 miles... last year, I think only 30% completed the 100 miles.
No.
Because race course was very tough.
Yeah.
But I want to challenge.
And in the rain then, was it all muddy as well, or was the trail pretty good?
It's muddy.
Muddy, yeah.
Yeah. Some people lost their shoes because of muddy.
Oh.
And then they decided to DNF.
Yeah. It's tough to run without your shoes.
Yes, it's pretty tough today, but enjoyable.
So there's one for the people listening to go check out. I saw that you did one of your Ironman races in Busselton.
Yes, my first Ironman race.
Your first Ironman, okay. Well, I lived in Perth for a year. I was on a teacher exchange. That's my day job, is I'm a high school teacher. Mm-hmm. And I was on exchange, coincidentally, because I didn't know her at the time, with pro triathlete and Ultraman world champion Kate Bevilacqua. She's from Perth. So
yeah.
I thought Western Australia was a beautiful place and a great place to live. What was your impression of Western Australia?
I really loved her. Yeah, it was my first time to visit Western Australia in my life. And it's more beautiful than I expected.
Yeah, they have the nice white sand beaches and...
Yes. And when we swim in the race, I can find some turtles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And me. But there are the turtles, fishes. Oh, I almost forgot it's a race.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't stop to like look and touch them and stuff, yeah. Did you? You stayed in your race.
Yeah. It was so beautiful. And the race course is also beautiful. Mm-hmm. And very proud of the fast course.
In looking at the other things that you've done, I know that for most triathletes, swimming is usually either their best thing or it's the thing that they really struggle with. And I saw that you did an ultra swim in Thailand. Was that because you enjoy swimming and you want to do ultra swim, or is it because it's something you're working on?
I didn't love swimming, that's it. I went to there with Makoto.
Oh, with Makoto, okay.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the ultra swim. What's that event like?
It's called Ocean Man. It's like an Ironman race. Like Ironman race, but only for swim.
Right.
They also have a world championship. And every year they change a place for world championship.
Okay, so it rotates each year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's part of a race series, the one that you did.
Yeah.
It's Ocean Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you done any of the other Ocean Man events?
Not yet. Actually, I registered Ultra Ocean Man in Italy last year, but it's canceled.
Okay.
Yeah, but this year, hopefully, I can join that race.
And since you were accepted to Ultraman Canada, you were also able to get into another 515 race, and you completed that before COVID hit. You did the 515 race in Israel. Now, for the listeners, the Israel race calls itself Ultraman Israel, but it's not an official Ultraman family race.
I know that.
Yeah, so I just want to clarify this for some of the listeners because sometimes they get confused when they see Ultraman and they think they're doing a qualifying race and then they apply to Ultraman World Championship in Hawaii and they're not accepted. So Australia, Poland, India all use the Ultraman in their title, but they are not qualifiers. The qualifiers are our race, Canada, Arizona, and Florida. So I just wanted to mention that for the people that might be listening so that they're not confused. But with that out of the way, tell me about your race in Israel. How was that race? How was the course? How were the people? Tell me about that race.
I decided to do the Ultra Israel. I just tried to find some 515 bases in the world. But also... Israel is one of my dream destinations, so it was very nice to be there. And I just liked the Ultra Israel Facebook page.
Yeah.
And then race organizer tried to catch me.
Oh, the race director was pursuing you to come to the race?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they pushed me a lot. It was not my plan because... I didn't have any sports background. I started sports just 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And my first ultraman is only 1.5 years after I started serious training.
Yeah, that's pretty quick.
So it was not my plan, but they pushed me a lot. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Then I said, okay, I will go. Then I don't have any friends in Israel, and from Japanese TV, I have some travels in Israel and the Middle East. So I was a bit afraid to visit there.
Okay.
But I told everything I thought in my mind to the race director, and they. We had a lot of chat, video mm-hmm. meeting, and tried to relieve my mind.
Right. They try to convince you.
Yeah. And they're very nice people.
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah.
Then I didn't find any my supporters. No, how can I say?
Crew?
Yes. I couldn't find my crews. And I asked some of Japanese friends, but they also afraid to visit Israel.
Okay.
And then I asked the race director, and they introduced me, my crews.
They gathered some crew for you from local people?
Yeah, from that side. The race course is very beautiful. We started a race in from the lake called Galicia, I think. It was said that Jesus Christ walked on the lake. It's a historical place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we started swimming in that lake and then biking from the north part to the around the Red Sea.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not a travel, but I could see the I could enjoy most of all part of Israel.
And you were saying that you were a little bit concerned about going to Israel, but the race director assured you that, you know, it was safe for you to come and things like that. Once you got there, did you feel it was safe and you were okay, or did you feel any times where you didn't feel safe?
It's completely safe.
Completely safe, yeah.
Yeah, yes. I can say yes.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And my crews are very nice. Yeah, I couldn't have done it without my crews. I really appreciate them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're all like my new family. That's Ultraman.
That's Ultraman. Yes, the Ohana. Yes, that's exactly what it is. You go to these races and you come back with new family members.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy a lot.
And do you think that now that you've done a race of that distance, is there things that you learned at that race that you will use to when you come to Canada? Like what are some of the things that you learned about your own racing that you can apply to racing the same distance in Canada?
Well, nothing special, but I think I should go more long ride and long run.
More long on your training, you need to do more long rides and long runs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you ever at risk of missing a cutoff when you were in the Israel race? The 12-hour cutoff?
No. I always did make it around 11 hours or 30 minutes every day.
And then do you have expectations of what you want to do in Canada as far as times, or you just want to finish?
Next time, I want to finish sub-30.
Sub-30, okay.
Yeah. I have been training very hard these days, so I'm pretty sure I can make it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing else to do, right, except for train.
That's right. And my plan is after Ultraman Canada, of course I wanted to try the Ultraman World Championship.
Okay, yeah.
And after 6 months of Ultraman World Championship, I wanna join Transam. Yeah, it means Transamerica 2022.
So you have a lot of things on the horizon then.
Yes, because I want to try. I want to challenge by myself. So, but Transam, I have to swim 50K,
mm-hmm.
and then 5,000 kilometers biking. And 500 kilometers running in Death Valley.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the bad water race.
Yes, bad water course.
Yeah. When you come to Canada, mm-hmm. you are also planning to stay for Ironman Canada.
Yes.
And tell me a little bit about your plan for the Ironman race then. Is that just, again, do you have another time goal in mind now that you've done a couple of Ironmans, or are you just trying to tack on an extra race because you're traveling to Canada?
I just want to visit Canada. And I'm not seeking for world championship for Ironman.
Mm-hmm.
So just want to visit there and enjoy traveling and enjoy races, and that's it.
Yeah, okay.
Especially it's after Ultraman Canada.
Yeah, that's a couple of weeks after, so.
Yeah, I would be very tired. I don't want to push myself. Just
no, you won't be tired. You'll be in peak performance.
Peak performance?
Peak performance, yeah, because you'll have enough time to recover from the Ultraman, and then it'll just be an awesome race for you.
Let's see. I'm not sure about that.
You spend a couple of days going to the wineries in Penticton to relax.
Sounds
It'll all be good. I really appreciate the time that we've had to discuss your racing career and your fascinating background when you're drift car racing and plastic surgeon and all the jobs that you've had. For such a young lady, you've certainly filled your life so far, and I can see you have great aspirations in your athletic career to come. So I look forward to meeting you in person when you come to Penticton. Hopefully it's this year. So thank you very much for coming on the show, and we look forward to meeting you in Canada.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing you all in Canada very soon.
Today we are going to end the episode with our next crew story. If you want to be on the podcast by sharing a crew story, just email me at 515ultraman@gmail.com. Here's Canadian Will Rogers.
Will Rogers here, 7-time Ultraman finisher and 25-time crew member, crew chief, whatever you want to call me. I've crewed for Alan McPherson, Armando Amanili, Stacey Shand, Lucy Ryan, Melissa Urey, a host of others from around the world, mostly North America. But, you know, my favorite guy for just things going haywire is basically Andres Villagrant out of Ecuador. He came up here to do Ultraman Florida. That was the second year they had it. A lot of things went wrong that could have gone wrong that were unexpected. We got him through, though. The weather turned very cold. It was 1 degree Celsius the morning of the swim, which, they delayed the swim by 2 hours from 7 till 9, which was okay. You know, I mean, it was nice and light when we started and people were able to get up, you know, sleep in a little bit more. The trouble is that pushed that into the darkness. And once the sun goes down in Florida, it is pitch black, very much like in Hawaii. So we got him through the swim. He was a little over the 6 hours, but he was told if he made that up on the bike, that would be great. The big thing about the swim was that was my first time ever kayaking for any athlete. And trust me, I had to pee for 3 hours and 20 minutes out there. Other things from that race, it was so bitterly cold that morning. And then a couple of people went in the lake, flipped their kayaks, and they weren't wearing proper gear. They were very cold, of course. But everybody got through it. As the day went on, the dark set in, and people were cycling on the highway in pitch black. We made a turn down a long stretch, about 25 miles, you know, 40K to the finish line of the day. And Andres tells me that he's lost his cell phone, and it's his business phone. So we had to go back and look for it. I actually found it in the middle of the highway, wrapped in a glove, and I could see the light in the darkness when we were phoning it. Andres, he's a good cyclist. It was bitterly cold again the next morning. And as the day went on, as it does in Florida, if it's cold for 1 or 2 days, that's what happens. You know, we wrapped him up in everything possible. We were buying extra clothes for him for the morning starts. And then as the day went on, he started stripping clothes off, of course, and got down to regular ordinary cycling gear and finished day two quite strongly. And then, of course, you know, the guy goes out and does an 8-hour and 5-minute double marathon. And his glasses broke, his running glasses, his favorite glasses. We didn't really have a spare set for him, so we were trying to Mickey Mouse his broken ones together. So that was my story for crewing from that race. It was an adventure. I'll never forget it.
Hey, if you liked what you heard today, please tell a friend and be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'd appreciate it if you'd rate and review the show while you're there. Drop the names of the people you think we should interview, and we'll get in touch with them and make that happen. Thank you for listening to 515, the Ultraman Podcast, a production of 55 Enterprises, brought to you by Ultraman Canada. Now really, go subscribe now before you forget.